Welcome back to Snap Judgment, the Eye of the Beholder special. Today, just because things look one way to one person doesn't mean that's the way they really are. Case in point, our next story comes to us by way of a fantastic new show called Israel Story. And in it, producer Shoshi Shmulevitz finds out what happens when at long last you cave in to your parents' demands.
It was about 7 years ago that Ghazi Albaloui's father was first diagnosed with kidney cancer. And Ghazi still remembers the day, about 3 years into the treatment, when he took his dad home from the hospital.
And he just stopped me at a stoplight. And I remember exactly where it was, like Court and Warren in Brooklyn. And he turns to me as we're waiting for this light to change. And he turns, he goes, you know, I want to see your children before I die. That statement right there propelled me to do things that I'd never thought I would do.
You see, Ghazi's parents were originally Palestinian refugees, and they'd been pressuring him for a long time to get married to a traditional Muslim girl. But even though he was born in a refugee camp, Ghazi always felt more American than Palestinian. So this idea of settling down, it really terrified him, particularly because of the way he was expected to settle down.
You can't date without being married. That's like the Islamic way. You can't date someone without marrying them. So it's like the ultimate let's play Russian roulette with your life way of marriage. It's like, oh, you really? Well, let's get married and then let's date.
But Ghazi also knew that he loved his dad and that before he died, he wanted to give him those grandchildren.
So I did something very impulsive. I had a conversation with my mom. I never thought I would have with her, but I was like, look, I want to compromise with you guys. I want a woman who is more on the modern side of things. We're Jordanian, Palestinian. I think Queen Rania of Jordan is amazingly beautiful. If I can find someone like Queen Rania of Jordan, I would be so happy. And so my mom's exact words, Queen Rania, yeah, her family's from Tulkarm, where our relatives live. I'll tell you what, in Tulkarm, it's like going to a lemon tree. You could pick all the Queen Ranias you want. You could just pluck them out. And she did this thing with her hands where she mime plucking a Queen Rania off a tree. And I'm like visualizing like beautiful women hanging like Queen Rania on a tree that I would just pluck out when I got there. So I book a ticket.
And the next thing he knows, Ghazi is flying into Tel Aviv, hailing a taxi, and getting dropped off at a checkpoint in the West Bank.
And now I'm walking towards soldiers with a huge suitcase who are literally looking at me with their guns up, not pointing at me, but they're like, kind of like, what is this guy doing? And I'm like, oh. This is when it dawns on me that this might be a really big mistake. You should not have left Brooklyn. So I go into Tulkarm and I go to what my father told me to go to, which is a section of the refugee camp that my family lives in. Harat al-Balawna, neighborhood of the Balawna. The Balawna is my family tribal name, and that is where I pull up and, you know, meet my family, and then eventually they start taking me around to meet women. You sit down, there's the men of the girl's family on one side of the living room, my family guys sit on one side, and then you're just kind of waiting there, you kind of small talk. People are like chain smoking these rooms and like I'm like dying here. And then eventually the girl, and it's almost every time verbatim, the girl comes out with a tray of drinks. She serves all the men and the last drink is for you. She makes eye contact with you, then sits with her relatives. And then you just sit and you just stare at each other like something's supposed to happen. It's such a weird thing. But a lot of these girls would come out of these rooms and I'm thinking Queen Rania all the way. I'm thinking this is gonna be a hot girl coming through this door.
And the first woman he met was attractive.
Turned out to be my 17-year-old second cousin. She was actually kind of cute.
But the cousin thing was a deal breaker for Ghazi. So he kept looking.
I sat with one girl, Islamic girl, who was a pharmacist. So you could go, oh, she's like a scientist. She asked me, do you pray? I said, no, I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm not going to lie. I don't pray. She goes, oh, you're going to go to hell. I guess that's Tulkarm's version of, can I please have the check?
A week goes by, a week and a half. Ghazi's going from house to house, drinking tea, meeting women. But he keeps striking out. On top of that, the conditions of the refugee camp where his family lives are really starting to get to him.
The refugee camp is just like such a depressing thing. Kids with no shoes on, people are poor, dirt everywhere. I would take 3 showers a day. Nice Jewish settlements with nice clean houses across the fence, which I watch every day. And I wish, why couldn't my family have been Jewish settlers? Why? So I'm already like checked out. I'm going back to New York. That's it, I'm done. I kind of did what I had to do here for my father. And then like someone goes, look, there's this girl. Let's just go see her. She's at an amusement park with her mom. We know her. We already talked. They're going to meet us there. So I go with my cousin and my niece. I'm not expecting anything. Get to the amusement park, meet the mom. She goes, oh, she's with her sister on the Ferris wheel. And it's a Ferris wheel supposed to do a 360. It's supposed to do circles. But this is Tulkarm. The Ferris wheel is not doing 360s. It is doing a 180. So it would go up and then come down like a crescent moon. It's like everything is breaking down in here. The bumper cars are not bumping. They had like a zoo. The snake died, they told me. It's like so sad, the conditions there. I mean, people need... And so... Anyway, so I'm trying to figure out what this girl looks like because the Ferris wheel is coming down, going up, coming down, going up. But this girl gets out and I like focus on her and the girl looked like Audrey Hepburn. She wasn't wearing a hijab, very Western looking, had really cool looking jeans. I say hello to her. She's a little shy. We walk back to her mom. I sit with her mom. We're talking.
Her family, it turned out, was a lot like Ghazi's, Muslim but modern. And unlike his relatives, they actually lived outside the refugee camp in a nicer part of town. If there was a deal breaker, Ghazi couldn't find one.
The conversation turns to, do you ever let your daughter go to live in America? I live in New York. It's really nice there. Mom's like, yeah, totally. And, you know, it was kind of a done deal there. I was like, oh, if the mom is agreeing to this, it's cool. And, you know, I thought she was innocent. And a part of me thought, you know what, I can give her a great life. We can love each other. She can take care of me. I can take care of her. And I'm walking back with my cousin. I'm like, dude, done. I'm ready. Let's get the guys. Let's just do this. We got married on Christmas, December 25th. I remember that specifically. I thought it was really romantic that I got married on Christmas. We go to the Islamic Sharia court. And then I signed this wedding contract. And at that point, she is my wife, right? But really, in their eyes, she's only my fiance. Even though we're married on paper, she's not really your wife until that wedding night when we give her to your family and she becomes yours.
But now that Ghazi and, let's call her Farah, are technically married, they no longer need supervision, meaning they're allowed to be alone together while the two families prepare for the big wedding.
And what you get to feel as you go along is this person is totally uncomfortable with me, which I can totally understand that.
But one thing Ghazi's aunts and uncles couldn't understand, and which was kind of bothering them, was that Farah's family kept asking Ghazi to buy things for them, ice cream, aspirin, stuff like that.
And it's such not the Arab customary thing. Usually if you're a guest of an Arab household, Arabs are just like so offended that you would even suggest paying for anything because you're like the house guest.
Still, Ghazi doesn't want to rock the boat, so he goes along with it. And then one night, Farah finds him in his room.
She comes in and she goes, oh, I want to show you pictures of my brother. Her brother's a police officer in training. She comes from a cop family. And she opens up this folder and there's a bunch of photos in there. Just photos of her brother doing kind of like an obstacle course. He's climbing the rope. He's like running. It's hot out. You can see guys with their shirts off. And then at a certain point, it's him posing with his shirt off. And then him posing with his shirt off with a gun, like a machine gun, cigarette in his mouth, like seductive pose. And then she turns to me, she goes, isn't he tasty? I'm like, huh? Isn't he tasty? And she goes, can't you see why all the girls want him? But the way she said it, I'm like, what the hell, Jess? It's like the fourth day, and I'm like, this family is nuts.
And my younger cousin brought up the fact that she was not the virgin image of a girl who stays home. She's, you know, she's gone out with some guys behind her family's back, you know, stuff that I have no idea about until, you know, of course, until I signed the wedding contract.
But Ghazi, like, come on, like you want a modern, like westernized girl who's not wearing a hijab, but then she also has to be a virgin.
Yeah, but you know what? It's this whole fantasy that my parents built up for me that said, you know what? All these girls in Tulkarm are under lock and key. You're going to get yourself a girl that has not been polluted by society. And then, you know, and of course, they're also throwing in the fact that she's going to look like, you know, Queen Rania of Jordan. And so, like, all that builds up. And then, you know, you finally get someone that kind of resembles your fantasy. And then the fantasy starts to crack.
Meanwhile, Ghazi is making more and more purchases. Farah's mother, he says, turns out to be something of a big-time spender, and she's having him pay not just for incidentals, but for nights out, groceries, even utility bills. And Farah doesn't seem to be warming up to him at all. In fact, she just gets colder until she finally puts her foot down and says that there won't be any sex on the wedding night.
And so at a certain point, you know, you stop and you think and you go, okay, this family's using me for my money. And this person didn't see a life with me, but her mom probably pushed her into marrying me, which was not cool. And that this girl signed on the dotted line.
So Ghazi finally decides to put his own foot down.
We're going to go buy a wedding dress the next day. If she asks for an expensive wedding dress, I'm done with her. I'm going to tell her I can't marry you.
And sure enough, the dress that Farah and her mother pick out is super expensive.
I kind of was like, tell her we're going to another wedding gown store. I think that's a little high. Mother comes out, doesn't look happy. My wife comes out, doesn't look happy. Start walking, silence. And I turn to my wife. I'm like, what's wrong? Oh, you know what's wrong. You shouldn't have upset my mother. She said it in such a way that I just stopped without, it's been building up. I was like, you know what? Can't do this. I divorce you.
Then Ghazi turns around and leaves Farah and her mother just standing there in the street.
So I had a nervous breakdown. A nervous breakdown being I cry, scream, and then walk through a refugee camp just cursing myself. I tell my uncle, I gotta get out of this. Somewhere, don't worry, stop, stop. You like, don't cry. I'm like, 34-year-old guy crying. I've been like robbed at gunpoint in Brooklyn and I never cried then. I peed on myself, but I didn't cry. And here I am like walking through this room just crying. It's like, stop, don't cry. I know this great lawyer. I'm like, who is this lawyer? He goes, don't worry. He's the best in all of Tulkarm. His name is Arafat Arafat. I'm like, so like, it was enough to make me stop crying and go, Arafat, Arafat? He's like, yes, Arafat, Arafat. He's the best lawyer in all of Tulkarm.
And at this point, Ghazi needs a lawyer. He knows he just left Farah and her family hanging in a big way, and in public, no less. So he walks back into town to meet with Arafat, Arafat.
And he's like, tell me, what happened? I was like, Arafat, Arafat, this is what happened. He goes, did you enter her? And he made a hole with his finger, and he put the... I said, no, I tried to. I wish I had entered her. He goes, okay, that's good. That's good. And he sits back in his chair and he thinks, that's good. I said, listen, I got to get out of here. I've had it. I'm nervous breakdown. I've been crying. Look at my eyes. He goes, why were you crying? Because men don't cry. He's like, so she's like, this is too much for me. He goes, don't worry about it. You're not really married to her. I said, but dude, I have this one. He goes, yeah, technically you are, as far as Allah is concerned, that you are married to this girl, but you didn't have sex with her. So there's kind of like purity to who she is. He goes, sign this. It's a power of attorney. I will be you here in Tulkarm. He goes, don't worry. I'm going to make it all better. Go back to America. I will take care of this for you. And then I get this call from her uncle, the chief of police, who, as I know now, is a nut job. He has had people's legs broken for my wife, just whistling or like saying something to her in a like a come on way. Like, two guys ended up in wheelchairs for like 2 months.
But it was even worse than Ghazi knew at that moment, because marrying Farah wasn't the only mistake he'd made.
In my hysteria, I had told someone in town, she's not gonna have sex with me, she's having sex with her brother. Like, because I'm having a nervous breakdown. This, like, coupled with the fact that I just divorced her, got back to the brother. So the brother said he had dishonored our family by saying I had sex with my sister. I issue a fatwa against this guy. If he is to show his face at any point, I will kill him dead in the street. Now, her uncle saying, oh, I'm going to send the police car to come get you, and we should really talk about this. I'm like, I started freaking out. This guy's going to kill me. I said, listen, I'm really emotional. I can't talk right now. I need to drink some tea, relax. I'll come see you in the morning. He goes, you're going to come in the morning? I said, yeah. I was like, where am I going to go? I'm in Tulkarm. He goes, all right, I'll send a car for you in the morning. Hung up the phone, ran into my room in that refugee camp, packed that suitcase up. Everyone had gone to sleep. And I just lay there with the suitcase, holding the suitcase like it was my mother. And every time a light would come on the door, I'm like, they're coming for me. They're coming. They're going to come get me. And I wait. I know the buses start running at like 5. I pick up that suitcase. I don't even say anything to my relatives. I run through that door. And now I'm running through the refugee camp. It's like semi-dark. The sun is coming out. Chickens are like cackling. And I'm running with the suitcase on my head. And I'm like running through alleyways. People are in their underwear. I see people through windows. I see people having breakfast. I see the news. And I get to the bus. I remember getting on that bus. I'm like, oh, please don't let them stop this bus at the checkpoint. Got past the Palestinian checkpoint. Get to the Israeli checkpoint. Now we're on our road. End up in Ramallah.
At which point, Ghazi takes another taxi out of the West Bank and into Jerusalem. Then he boards a flight to take him back to New York. Later, the two families would reach a divorce agreement. But Ghazi says, at first, he felt remorse.
Because I misjudged the situation that I was walking into. I go to a place that I've never been to before, to a culture that I have no idea how it operates. I'm trying to play a game that belongs to another person with this idea my parents had written for me, and I shouldn't even be there.
All of which is on his mind when he's finally back in Brooklyn at his parents' door.
They're like, hey, look who's home. I was like, hey, so did you hear anything from our relatives about Arafat, Arafat? They're like, don't worry about it.
It was like such a nonchalant, you'll get better, it's okay.
Right? This is after I'd gone through everything. And then they turn back and they watch Al Jazeera.
Here's a punchline. My dad was not dying.
Today, Ghazi is 38, still single, and his father is still alive, holding out for Ghazi to get married in the traditional way to a nice Muslim girl.
He just Jewish guilted me in his own Arab way to get married for him. And, you know, I kind of feel it still. You love your parents so much that you end up hating yourself, and that's where I am today. I love them so much that I hate myself. Look at what I did. I shouldn't have done that, but I did it because I love him.
Thank you so much, Ghazi, for sharing your story. We know that with a game like that, you're going to find a bride soon. The story is produced by Shoshi Smulovitz with sound design by Tarek Fuda. It was adapted for Snap by Joe Rosenberg and Renzo Gorio. And if you want to hear more Israel story goodness in both Hebrew and English, check out the links on our website, snapjudgment.org.